Well, goodbye. Bye, Mother. Bye.
Do be careful, won't you, Jeffrey?
I'll be fine. Don't
worry. Why the hell don't you look where you're going?
Sorry, very sorry.
Oh, dear. I do hope Jeffrey will be all right.
We present The Cleverest Man at Oxford by Jeffrey Parkinson, with Jeffrey Beavers as Jeffrey Parkinson.
On the 7th of October, 1951, I set out on my small motorcycle for Oxford University. Well, let me be quite honest. I'd been accepted by the Department of Social Studies at Young Husband House by something of a fluke. I mean, academically, I was, well, not the most promising material. I'd never actually failed an examination at school, but that was merely because I'd never been considered sufficiently fit to actually take one.
We'd like Geoffrey to sit for his school certificate, Mr. Massing.
Well, examinations aren't the be-all and end-all of life, Mrs. Parkinson. Yes. Perhaps your son will prove to be good with his hands.
With his hands?
With his hands.
Regrettably, I not only failed to be any good with my hands, it soon transpired that every part of my anatomy seemed pretty useless from a commercial point of view. And so, as it became growingly apparent that I was incapable of helping myself, I decided I'd try to make a living helping others. As a social worker. Fortunately, at that time, I don't think the Department of Social Studies at Oxford could have been too exacting in its entry requirements.
Well, now... Yes, Now then, Mr. Parkinson, why exactly do you wish to undertake training in social work, eh?
I want to help others.
Others?
Yes.
Others? Yes.
Others? Mm. With their problems.
Others with their problems, yes.
But what if you found that others hadn't got any problems, huh?
Ah. Or what about problems that somehow won't actually attach themselves to others, eh?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Wanting to help people is a good reason for studying social work, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Dear me, yes.
Yes, none better.
Oh,
yes.
Good.
Well, now... Is there any other question we should ask, Mr. Parkinson?
I don't really think so.
Only having invited him all this way, perhaps we should.
Yes, 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 of course we should, yes.
Yes, yes. Yes.
I just wonder whether Mr. Parkinson might have thought of a question we might ask him.
What an excellent idea.
Oh.
Perhaps even a question that he found difficult to answer.
Yes, yes. I mean, you might even think of a question that completely caught him out, eh? How about that?
To my surprise, on the basis of that very curious interview, I received a letter of acceptance. As I bumped and rattled my way along the road to Oxford, I visualized the social prospects that lay ahead of me with some degree of pleasure. There would be all those famed university tea parties, at which, in my imagination, I was, of course, to be the distinguished visitor.
So witty. Quite incredibly so.
Geoffrey, do tell us, what is the secret of youth?
Yes, Geoffrey, what is the secret?
Do tell us, Master.
How may one stay forever young?
The secret of youth is to be born later.
Oh, you hear that? To be born later.
Yeah, how devastatingly brilliant.
They say he's the cleverest man in Oxford.
Young Husband House was situated just a stone's throw from the Martyrs' Memorial. When I arrived, I was immediately asked to go and see the senior administrator, Miss Beatrice Beeches.
I always think a male student needs a mother, you know, Mr. Parkinson.
Huh?
I like to find my male students a mother.
Actually, Miss Beeches, I've got a mother.
Yes, yes, I'm sure you have, Mr. Parkinson. I mean, a landlady who can act like a mother. In your case, I have in mind Mrs. Gillies of Maple Drive, Headington.
Oh, yes?
Yes. You know, both Mrs. Gillies and her husband are great animal lovers. You'll settle in with them without the slightest difficulty, I'm quite sure.
Oh.
Uh, Come here, you naughty dogs. Come here.
Good afternoon.
Well, you dogs will be the death of me.
I'm Jeffrey Parkins.
Don't ever keep dogs.
No, all right.
Especially spaniels. Come here immediately. Eh? No more fudge if you don't come back here. I mean it.
I've been sent by the Department of Social Studies. They said you had a room to let.
Yeah, he doesn't think I mean it. No more fudge, Carlos. Mr. Parkinson, would you G-R-A-B-H-I-N?
Oh.
Not the tail. By the collar, the collar. Got you, you naughty boy. Quick, close the door or I'll be off again sniffing at things he shouldn't sniff at.
Oh, right.
Now then, sit down immediately.
Me?
Carlos, sit.
Oh.
Your room is at the front.
My room?
£1.10 a week with breakfast and an evening meal.
Yes.
If you don't behave yourself, you'll be put to sleep.
Eh?
Do you hear me, Carlos? This kind gentleman will have you put to sleep straight away if you're not a good doggy.
I wondered if I'd be wise to take lodgings with Mrs. Gillies, but then I thought of the complications of going back and explaining my misgivings to Miss Beeches. The following day, I met for the first time my fellow students on the course. A sherry party had been arranged in the junior common room.
So you see, darling, I just got a very good second-class degree at Queen Mary's College.
Oh, that's very good, Esther, very good.
Of course, I'd like to have got a first.
Hello.
Hello. Gillian, I didn't know you were on the course. How absolutely spiffy.
Oh, dear. I'd want to talk to you. It must be very warm in the Sudan at the present time, Mr. Mander.
Not as warm as it will be when the revolution comes, believe me, Miss Beeches. Oh. In Oxford, you learn social science, but in the Middle East, we live it in blood.
Oh, well, let's hope not for yet a while.
Good afternoon. My
that woman is useless, man, believe me.
Oh.
Completely useless. Now, if you want to meet a really holy and reverential woman, you must come to Al-Fashir and meet my mummy.
Yes?
My mummy prayed to Allah that I should come to Oxford University. And here I am, man. Oh, yes. And when I go back to Al-Fashir, I shall take my mummy, the best diploma ever given to anyone by Oxford University. Believe me, man. Oh, yes, the best diploma.
I can understand Freud's theories. I mean, well, they're all about sex, aren't they?
Certainly.
And although sex can be awful in the wrong hands, I mean, it's easy to understand, isn't it, by and large?
Certainly.
In theory, that is.
Certainly, yes.
Hello.
You're on the course?
Yes.
Yes, well, oh, I've got to leave.
Oh.
It's nice talking to you.
Yes, thank you. And the moment, the very moment I finish with this course, I'm packing my bags and I'm back with boys on factory floor, fighting for the unity of mankind, extermination of the ruling classes and birth control on the race.
Are you indeed,
yeah.
Mr. Dunn? Well, before that happens, I do hope you enjoy our time with us on the course.
What? Oh.
Right. What did you read, darling?
Me?
You, yes.
What did I what?
Read.
Oh, not a great deal, really.
Actually, I meant, where were you?
Where was I when?
Before.
Before what?
Before you were here.
Do you mean on Earth? Before I was born on Earth?
Really, darling, you are a wonder.
Oh, I was at home, in Epsom.
Which university?
Oh, I haven't been to university before.
You haven't?
Well, I'm afraid not.
What a hoot! What a marvellous hoot!
Yes, I suppose it is.
Lewis, darling, are you hiding the salt?
This is no place for me. Everyone's either too intelligent, too sophisticated, or has been to too many important places. Well, where can I go now? Nowhere, but back to my lodgings and the mad Mrs. Gillies.
Evening.
Oh, good evening.
You're the new student, then?
Yes.
I believe in education. Helps you win arguments, doesn't it?
I suppose it does sometimes, yes.
I'm Mr. Gillies, Mrs. Gillies' husband. Mr. Gillies. We were married in 1935. Had our first spaniel 9 months later. Splitting image of Mrs. Gillies it was. Temperamentally speaking, of course.
William comes to bed, Mr. Gillies.
Always snapping.
The next day at young husband house, I made an acquaintance that was to prove quite crucial during the following 2 years.
Mr. Parkinson, I want to introduce you to Miss Bulwer.
Hello.
Hello.
Probably you met each other yesterday at the sherry party.
No.
Yes.
Oh. But that's fine. Marvellous. Yes, good. Well, it just remains for me to offer you both my very best wishes. Yes.
Oh?
What for? What for?
Mm. We haven't both been married without knowing it.
Oh, Mr. Parkinson. How lovely. How lovely. No, no, no. You're tutorial partners. You will both work together. I suppose, in a way, well, yes, you could say it was a sort of marriage of two minds in the process of learning. Yes.
Oh.
Oh.
But how lovely, Mr. Parkinson. How lovely.
Geoffrey. Hmm? Oh. I can call you Geoffrey, can't I?
Of course.
I'm Elizabeth, but everybody calls me Lizzie.
Oh, right.
Why did you want to train to be a social worker?
Oh, don't ask me that. I never know what to answer.
I came on this course in order to avoid being raped by Mr. Washnut.
Good Lord. Who is Mr. Washnut?
Oh, he was just a typical English male.
Oh?
In my opinion, Mr. Washnut was warding off unconscious fears of homosexuality by ruthlessly pursuing women.
Oh.
Well, that was significant, too. He worked in a chemist shop. Well, don't you think that's significant? He's working in a chemist shop.
Well,
I worked in the chemist shop as well. That's how I discovered he intended to rape me.
Yes.
My working in the chemist shop wasn't significant.
Oh, I see.
I'm going to register my name at the New Bodleian Library, can I?
Oh, right, Elizabeth.
Lizzie!
Lizzie.
Here are your tickets.
Thank you.
That was the voice of a father-fixated female, if ever I heard one.
Hmm?
Hmm. I'm surprised you don't remember seeing me at the party yesterday, Geoffrey.
Probably I did. There were so many people there.
Did you see that awful man from Bradford? I think his name was Eric Dunn or something.
I can't exactly recall.
He had horrible teeth that stuck out like a tusk-toothed tiger. And he was leering at me the whole time in a nasty, undressing sort of way.
Oh.
I'm sorry, but would you please mind being quiet? Other students are trying to study.
I'm very sorry.
She probably only ticked us off out of unconscious envy.
Well, now, I think perhaps now would be a good time to try and make a start.
When?
Now, if that's all right with everyone.
Couldn't be better as far as I'm concerned, personally.
Well, let's get down to it, man. Because this world you Europeans live in is a real disgrace to human beings. And we've got to clean things up quick and fast.
Right. Yes, thank you. I thought we might perhaps start by taking a look at the workings of the poor law.
Terrible. Terrible.
Yes. Would you care to elaborate a little more on that, Mr. Chatto?
Not really. No, just that it was terrible.
Of course, there were certain aspects.
Now, listen, I've got a feeling we've already started to waffle.
Oh.
Yeah, now, let's really get down to brass tacks here. I mean, when we're talking about the poor law, what we're really talking about, I mean, what we really have to face, and face fair and square, is the truth. Right? I mean, the truth about one thing and one thing only. So why don't we all admit that, eh? I mean, would anyone seek to contradict me? Eh?
I wouldn't.
No.
In saying what you've said what had to be said, man.
Yes. I suppose it does amount to that.
I'm sorry, Eric, but I can't quite follow you.
You can't? You can't follow me?
No.
Oh, well, that's difficult, isn't it? of a pampered child of the petty bourgeoisie.
No, I'm not disagreeing. It's just that I can't grasp your point.
Really, Geoffrey?
You can't.
My, my.
Well, I'm not going to tell him. Let somebody else explain.
Yes. Somebody else should explain. That's right.
I don't want to break the flow of discussion, but I'm not quite sure what important truth Mr. Dunn was trying to bring to our attention.
Well, obviously, none of you understand plain English. I was talking about the workhouse.
I have a feeling that the poet, Gerard Manley Hopkins, was referring to the workhouse when he wrote those strange and haunting lines. Hope had grown grey hairs. Hope had mourning on, trenched with tears, carved with cares. Hope was 12 hours gone.
Well, now, that really does say it all.
I can't quite follow that 12 hours gone bit, Esther.
Sounds as though someone might have been pregnant.
I'm wrong. I'm sorry. I've made a mistake. The quotation comes from the wreck of the Deutschland.
I must say, I thought you had perhaps got a little confused, Miss Gilchrist.
Well, of course, Gerard Manley Hopkins was born in 1844 and died in 1889, so there would have been a lot of workhouses about throughout the entire length of his brief, sad life.
Indeed so.
He could even have known Karl Marx.
Well,
I mean, anybody could have known Karl Marx if they'd been alive at the same time as Karl Marx was alive, isn't that so? Well, of course it must be.
I think the thing that really worried me about the workhouse was the way they herded men and women together, particularly when the men were all unemployed and had nothing to do to occupy their minds except to think about, you know.
What do you mean by, you know?
Well, you know.
We don't know. I certainly don't know.
Well, everyone knows what you know means, unless they're, you know.
She's talking about the conjugal man.
Yes, what a really snipping way of putting it.
Well, why didn't Lizzie come out with it then?
Because I know what you're like. You've got a fixation.
Oh, have I?
I don't want to interrupt these interesting speculations, but as a matter of fact, I think that one of the many criticisms of the workhouse was that it did, in fact, segregate the sexes.
Segregation!
Just as you'd expect.
Segregation! That is segregation.
Well, perhaps now we might move
on. Oh, stop, man! Don't go on, man! There's a lot to be said about segregation, man. If the white man is good at anything, I tell you, it's segregating.
No doubt there's some truth.
They segregate the rich from the poor, the healthy from the sick, the old from the young, the black from the white. He segregates good citizens from bad citizens. He segregates theory from practice, business from friendship, religion from politics. Yes, he even segregates sex from love. I tell you, white men, you should be proud of your great civilization. Why do you think you are all so concerned about communicating, eh? Why you have so many newspapers, so many telephones? Why do you write so many notes and memos, so many letters and postcards? Why are there so many programs on the wireless and television? Why? Because you're all lost. You are all out of contact with each other and with the forces of life. You have segregated yourself into loneliness and isolation. And if you are not careful, one day you will segregate yourself into annihilation. Total annihilation! White men!
I think perhaps this might be an appropriate point to break for coffee.
Geoffrey!
Oh, hello, Ellen. Elsa.
Esther.
Hello.
Buying a book?
Just browsing, really. Are you?
I can't afford to buy books on my grant. I just come here to read poetry.
Not social science?
Good heavens, no. Why on earth should I want to do that?
Well, I mean, that's what we're here to study.
You may be, I'm not, darling. I came on this course because it seemed the only way I could spend 2 years in Oxford.
What are you going to do when the 2 years are over?
What do you plan to do when you die?
You think leaving Oxford is like dying?
Oh,
Oxford is everything. Everything else is nothing.
I think it's a rather grubby little place that somehow manages to believe in its own myths about itself.
You're a cynic, Geoffrey. But then that's a nice Oxfordy thing to be.
That's a silly thing to say, really. I suppose the truth of the matter is the place frightens me.
Does it?
I feel like a small, nervous child who's suddenly been brought to an ancient mansion and set before a group of very aristocratic old ladies. Oh. I try to make my presence known, but they hardly seem to recognise my existence. You see, they've lived an eternity.
They hold so many deep, unfathomable secrets.
Yes. I know for certain these grand dames would never be overawed even by the cleverest of children brought before them. They've incorporated the past, they transcend the present, and they will undoubtedly mould the future. Heavens, I seem to be talking rather a lot, Esther.
Geoffrey, I think you should fall in love. Then you'd feel a lot happier.
Fall in love?
Why don't you fall in love with Lizzie?
But she's my tutorial partner.
Doesn't make it incest, you know. I'm really quite taken with love at the moment, you know, Geoffrey. Falling in and out of it quite desperately.
It's not an emotion I've really had much experience of, Esther.
Oh, just nonsense. When anything worries me, Geoffrey, I just kill it by falling in love. The bigger the worry, the greater the love. Oh, what time is it?
Nearly 4:20.
Oh, I must fly. I've got to be at rehearsal at the Lorimer's Buildings by 4:30. What are you doing?
Now?
Yes. I'll introduce you to a unique human being called Weeks Johnson. He's writing a wonderful opera.
But Esther,
You must meet Weeks Johnson, Geoffrey, whatever else you do in Oxford. He's a composer of consummate genius, and he has deep brown eyes and lovely, lovely long fingers. Geoffrey, come in.
What's the opera called, Esther?
Oh, things haven't really got that far. In a way, you see, Weeks proceeds in the reverse way to most composers. He rehearses himself into a theme. He doesn't believe creativity is an inward experience. He says it's to be found in relationships.
Interesting.
It's rather difficult to explain, but you'll understand when you meet him.
Oh. Weeks is coming now.
Darling Weeks.
He's a genius, of course, but I don't think he's very talented.
I do not know whether I am ready for people.
Please, Weeks.
Do stay.
You look so pink and lovely, Weeks.
Thank you.
If you linger a while, chère Nature, you'll discover whether you're in one of your green, gregarious moods, will you not?
Perhaps so. Difficult to tell. Often when I am nicest to people, I hate them most, but don't realize until later. Then I suffer for my sacrifice.
You're so wonderful, so insightful, particularly when he's talking rubbish.
As I entered this room, I heard the opening bars of Rambo de Vacheres' Kalender Maiar. Tell me I was mistaken.
You were mistaken, Weeks.
I was mistaken.
Yes, Weeks, definitely.
I was mistaken.
Weeks.
You all must understand why I cannot tolerate the classical composers, pre-classical composers, post-classical composers, and composers.
Why, Weeks?
The answer is envy, even though they're all dead. And most men's gifts can be overlooked if they lay down their lives. My own creativity is so great, I can see no man as greater than myself.
And you often even transcend yourself, Weeks.
And here, for I declare a great truth unto you. Live your lives as though the entire world were created around you and for you. Grasp hold of your omnipotence. Grasp it as firmly as your ego will allow and society permit. Grasp it not as a gift from God, but as though you were God himself. Have the courage of your deepest sense of selfishness.
That sounds rather neurotic to me, Weeks.
But it's true.
I am so kind to you all. Even though not one of you invokes in me any emotion that rises above the pedestrian. But then that is so typical of me. On impulse, I might lay my life down for a total stranger, yet not be bothered to visit my dearest friend on his deathbed.
Does your life have a meaning, Weeks?
It is more valuable to ask the time of day than ask the meaning of life. All men suspect that they have somehow been shipwrecked on this miserable little planet. The godless fact, to which no adjustment can ever be fully made, lies in the simple fact that we do not know. We do not know what life is all about. Ask and count your good fortune if it is not given unto you. Amen.
Weeks, darling, may I introduce you to Geoffrey Parkinson?
Hello.
Is he real or a mere passing figment of my imagination?
What about your masterpiece, Cher, next?
Ah, yes, let us lose our eccentricities and false identities in the business of creation. Where are the consultos?
Here.
Here! Tenors! Sopranos! And finally the bassers! Oh, stop. Silence. Why didn't the quartet contribute, eh?
We really didn't think that we would move necessary.
I know what you were all about. You were all about the calendar Maya.
Oh, no.
Quite wrong.
Oh, you totally misjudge. Bacchus gives me hay fever.
Me too.
Then you can all sneeze your penitential way around in Christchurch Meadow every Friday afternoon, playing it to your heart's content.
Oh, dear. Oh,
have I made myself clear?
Yes, yes, Weeks.
The rehearsal is over. Weeks' rehearsal is over.
He's gone.
Wasn't that a quite incredible experience, Geoffrey?
Indeed.
I'm absolutely certain Weeks Johnson is one of the most creative spirits Oxford has seen since Byron came up and Shelley was sent down.
Probably so.
It can be said, I think, with some authoritative justification, that the English as a race have never much liked children. Let me commence by reading an extract from a late 15th century Italian text describing customs in the reign of Henry VII. The want of affection in the English is strongly manifested towards their children, for after having kept them at home till they arrived at the age of 7 or 9 at the utmost, they put them
Geoffrey.
Out both mares and females.
Yes, Lizzie?
Didn't you see me on Saturday?
Them
no.
For
I saw you years. Coming out of Blackwell Bookshop.
The most oh, offices.
Yes.
And few are exempted yes. from this fate. For everyone, however rich he may be, sends away his children into the houses of others, whilst he, in return, receives of those of strangers into his own. When we look, for example, to early Saxon attitudes towards child-rearing, we come face to face with the appalling phenomenon
I waved at you.
I didn't see you.
I definitely waved.
Yes.
I wondered if you'd seen me and decided to ignore me.
Well, of course not, Lizzie.
That's what crossed my mind, Geoffrey.
I didn't see you, really.
Pardon?
I didn't see you.
Oh.
even as far back as 1475, a dictum of child rearing was that children should never speak unless they were spoken to.
Darling!
Eh?
Geoffrey!
Oh, Esther!
Where are you going?
The New Bodleian, to study.
You can't, darling.
Why not?
You're going to take me punting on the river.
I'd love to, Esther, but it's just not possible. I've so much work to do, or I'll absolutely fluff my examinations.
Study later, darling.
I'm terribly sorry, Esther. I've no choice. I just must work.
I love the river.
I'm afraid I'm not very skilled with a pole.
You're doing exquisitely, darling. Absolutely exquisitely.
Oops. Oh, sorry. Did that splash you?
I've been thinking a lot about Keats recently. The poet.
Oh, Keats. Yes.
I visualized him on that boat, leaving England.
Yes.
His thin, emaciated body.
Yes.
That endless, consumptive cough.
Oh, whoops. Sorry again, Esther.
And as he looked upon the dark, eternal ocean, he kept whispering to himself, I'm going to die. I'm going to die.
Yes. Did he?
Oh. Your trousers are getting rather wet, aren't they, Geoffrey?
Yes. Must be the water.
Of course.
Esther?
Yes, darling?
You look very attractive in a punt.
Do I?
Yes, very.
Perhaps that's because I'm beginning to fall in love again, Geoffrey.
Are you being serious?
Oh, Geoffrey, you are so suburban.
I never know quite how to take you, Esther.
That's how life has to be amongst intelligent people. They're compelled to pose and posture, darling. Only people of average intelligence are serious about life. That's why they're so dull. The brilliant and the mentally retarded play, eternally play.
Sounds rather like one of Weeks' theories.
Geoffrey, look who are coming along the towpath.
Good heavens. They actually took it seriously. Oh, careful, darling.
Are you...
Parkinson.
Thank you, Mrs. Gillis.
Mr. Gillis! Will you please turn down the radio? Mr. Parkinson doesn't want to hear opera. He's soaked to the skin.
Ah!
When Carlos was about your age, Mr. Parkinson, in doggy years, of course, he fell in the river.
Did he?
He caught distemper and nearly died.
Oh.
Mind you, he's a thoroughbred, so probably he's more susceptible to illnesses than you are.
Ah. Oh.
Turn that noise down! Mr. Gillis! For heaven's sake!
Yes, Mrs. Gillis!
Who does Esther love? Who? Who else but a composer of
consummate genius? Me. No.
Me.
It can't be you.
Mister.
Oh, yes?
There won't
be any more hot water. Eh? Have you got enough to make
I won't keep you for more than a moment. Now that you're all settling well into the course, for those of you who are interested, we've arranged for you to take part in a number of visits of observation. Now, the first one is to a local authority's old people's home called the Happy Resting Place. And I'm quite sure you'll all find it a most fascinating experience. The matron would like a fascinating experience. A most fascinating experience.
How lovely to see you, Mr. Parkinson, and God bless you for coming. The old people have been so looking forward to your visit.
Oh, we have.
Thank you. Come by the fire. I've put on another log.
That's very kind of you.
I hope you didn't get cold coming here.
No, no, I'm fine, really.
You get yourself nice and warm. I'll go and get a nice pot of tea.
And I've made some little cakes, especially for you.
Oh, really, you shouldn't have.
Alice makes lovely little cakes.
I'm sure.
You know, you remind me of my son.
It's the smile on his handsome face. Oh,
really, you're quite embarrassing me. I don't quite know what to say.
Somebody really ought to knit you a cardigan, you know. Edith knits lovely cardigans.
Really, I can't allow it.
She'll love doing it.
She will.
I will.
Really?
Come along, my dears. Tea's ready and waiting with lots of lovely buttered toast.
The matron would like you all to arrive at the home promptly by 2 o'clock, and then she'll show you around the home.
I'm now going to take you all up to the dormitories. As you would all expect, of course, most of the old people are confined to their beds.
Naturally, yes.
Some of them may look a little unhappy, but you mustn't ever go by appearances with old people.
Of course not.
No, they must be very happy here.
Feel free to stop and talk to any of them if you'd like to. But not for too long, of course. Otherwise, they might get overexhausted.
Very good of you to show us around like this, matron.
Jeffrey, this place could have come out of a Dickens novel.
Yes.
Mr. Willows, I want you to eat up every scrap of that roly-poly pudding. Cook took a lot of trouble making it this morning.
Excuse me, matron lady.
Yes?
Can you tell me, matron lady, why all these old people are just lying around doing nothing?
I should have thought that was fairly obvious to anyone. They're being looked after.
Oh.
Have you opened your bowels today, Mr. Davis?
I don't know.
Good. Mr. Carter, put in your teeth. We've got visitors.
I can't find them, my friend.
Mr. Carter can be very pig-headed when he wants to.
But, matron lady, why aren't these old people being looked after by their own families?
What a question to ask. I think everyone knows, don't they? It's only in backward and underdeveloped countries that old people are looked after by their own families. In civilized societies, as soon as grandpa or grandma needs specialized care, then they come to a place like this and are given all the care and concern they can possibly want for.
Marvelous.
They're obviously being well looked after. You're doing a marvelous job.
Thank you so much for a really fascinating afternoon, matron.
I only do the best I can. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I would never allow my mummy to go to a place like that.
We must never grow old, Geoffrey. Old age is a lost land from which none return.
Very enlightening.
Thank you so much. Did you find the visit interesting?
Bye. Bye.
As you might guess,
that awful Eric Dunn tried his tricks.
Oh?
Didn't you see?
No.
Oh, you must have been the only one in the party who didn't. I was just looking at a dear old lady's knitting when he crept quietly up behind me and started breathing in and out like this.
I was aware of his presence.
Yes.
One day, he'll brutally rape me, and you won't believe it, will you, Geoffrey? You won't believe it.
I thought I'd find you in the new Bodleian, Geoffrey.
I've not really done any work yet, Esther.
How long are you going to be?
Well, probably till it closes.
Nonsense! Could you please be quiet?
Sorry. Examinations are looming on the horizon, Esther.
Now, listen to me, darling. We're going to have a cup of coffee at my room. Then I'm taking you to Exeter College to hear a remarkable singer called Alfred Deller singing medieval love songs. And then we'll talk about life and love.
Please, please do be quiet.
Isn't he an unbelievably beautiful voice for a man?
Unusual for a man.
It's the countertenor voice. It brings back all the great musical beauties of the ancient world.
Perhaps so.
I do enjoy being with you.
The world as God has made it, all is beauty.
Yes.
Robert Browning, 1812 to 1889.
I don't think all is beauty in life, Esther.
I don't suppose Robert Browning did either.
I think life is largely tedious. With just occasional outbursts of pleasure, pain, and panic.
You have to impose a fiction upon life, Geoffrey.
What sort of fiction?
Any that attracts you. Fame, for example. If you could strive for the fiction of becoming famous.
Me? I'd be lucky if I managed to become insignificant.
What do you want out of life, Geoffrey? Your ambition.
I don't have ambitions, Esther. For me, it's more than sufficient to escape actual failure.
Oh, Geoffrey, how sad. But you must have dreams.
Oh, yes. Dreaming is my drug.
If you dreamed you were in love with someone, would you have the courage to tell them, Geoffrey?
I don't know, Esther. I don't know.
Hello?
Geoffrey?
Mr. Gillies speaking. Hello? Mr. Parkinson?
Yes?
There's a lot of nonsense on the line. I think it must be a call for you.
Oh, thank you. Hello?
Yeah, well, Stanley, if you can get the manometer down to about, say, 40,000 miles, we can ask another 20 quid for that car. It's probably so, yes, yeah.
Hello?
Geoffrey.
Yes?
Oh, I think we're on a crossed line.
It seems all right now.
Now look here, Geoffrey. I'm phoning up because your mother's getting very worried.
Why is that?
Well, we never seem to hear from you.
Hello? Hello?
Oh, Stanley.
Hello?
That's not Stanley.
I think we're on a crossed line.
Well, bloody get off it then. It'll get uncrossed, won't it?
Oh, yes, sorry. Why did I allow myself to be bullied by that crook? Still, I suppose I am training to become a social worker.
Can everyone hear me? I do want everyone to hear me.
Oh, I wasn't expecting total silence. I know you'll all be very busy preparing for the examination. But to complete your practical work training, we do have just one final visit of observation to Cranbrook Prison.
Oh.
Now, I'm afraid some of you may find this a rather harrowing experience, but I do know the governor, Colonel Spratt, is a very harrowing experience.
governor will see you now, sir, if you'll come this way.
Oh, thank you.
Water! Give me water!
Water? I'm afraid I haven't got any water on me. Come!
Mr. Parkinson, Colonel.
Throw him in the dungeons with the rest.
Mr. Parkinson's come to visit the prison, Colonel, sir.
Oh, come in, come in. Sit down, Mr. Parkinson. I must apologize for the awful noise that bell makes.
Oh, that's quite all right.
You see, it's traditional to ring it when someone's being hanged, drawn, and quartered. Yeah, on busy days, I find it often leaves me with quite a headache. Well, now, what can we show Mr. Parkinson today, Chief?
Well, sir, it's all pretty routine stuff, I'm afraid, Colonel, sir. A couple of poachers are having a big chopped off at 3 p.m. Yeah. Apart from that, it's just the usual treadmilling and thumbscrewers up.
Betty, I'm afraid coming on Tuesdays, you do rather have to take potluck. Oh, now Saturday.
Oh, yes, Colonel.
Really, it doesn't matter.
You know, the modern prisoner hasn't the stamina of the old convicts I dealt with when I first joined the prison service. I mean, with most of these fellows here, you only have to stick a hot poker up one of their orifices and they start shrieking their heads off or writing letters to their members of parliament.
The Colonel's right, sir.
Namby-pambies! Mind you, having said that, yesterday I thought I'd take a little exercise, so I gave some fellow 100 lashes for dumb insolence. Dumb something or other.
Insolence.
And do you know, when I'd finished, I was in a cold sweat. Incredible.
Day, Colonel,
perhaps so. Perhaps the fact of the matter is I'm probably a very sensitive feeling sort of person. Yes, that's probably what I am. A very sensitive feeling sort of person.
So do please all try to be at the prison gates by 3:15, won't you?
Yes,
there are many reasons why a man may end up in prison. Many reasons, and most of them are to be found in the Bible.
In the Bible?
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Envy, greed, lust, murder, sodomy.
Governor, would it not be true to say that all the inmates of this penal institution are the victims of the capitalist system?
Didn't quite follow all that.
The capitalist system of the means of production, Governor.
Production? Production of what?
Everything.
Yes, oh yes, right, right. Go on.
Well, that's what they are, isn't it, Governor?
Isn't what?
The prisoners.
I'm still not with you.
All of them are victims.
Oh, good gracious, no. We don't punish people for being victims. Certainly not in this country. Certainly not. That would be the day.
No, Governor. I mean...
Well, now, I'm going to ask the chief officer here.
Sir.
Good afternoon, Chief.
Sir.
I'm going to ask the chief to show you round the prison, and then afterwards... Bring them all back here, Chief.
Sir.
And we'll have some tea and biscuits. I think they're ginger nut biscuits, actually. Yes.
Very nice. Thank you.
It looks a charming prison.
If I may ask you all to be good enough to step this way, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
We will start our tour by making our way to A Wing.
How are the rehearsals coming along for week's opera, Esther?
Oh, don't mention that, darling. It's all off.
Why?
Poor Weeks got himself into trouble with the Lord.
Lord? What did he do?
Well, I'm not quite sure. Apparently, he was being terribly affable one night in a gentleman's lavatory.
Oh.
And the police arrested him. And he was taken to court and sent to prison for 3 months. Seems so silly. But apparently, he'd been affable in lavatories before, though what difference that exactly makes, I can't see.
Where have they sent him?
Coming on this visit of observation originally, but then it occurred to me that I might see him here.
Oh, Esther, what would you say to him if you did?
I don't know. I suppose I'd ask him how he's getting along, you know, what the food was like, things like that.
Esther, come here and have a glimpse of the condemned cell.
Coming, Lewis.
There's nobody in it. Pity.
The day they ever abolish capital punishment will be a very sad day for this country. That is my considered opinion, ladies and gentlemen.
But does it do any good?
Well, probably not, but it makes everybody feel a lot better. Now, if you would care to follow me, we'll make our way to Blue Wing, where we see the long-term prisoners.
Actually, prison's not as awful as I imagined. I mean, I suppose I really was expecting dungeons and instruments of torture and all that sort of thing, but it's just like a big warehouse that packs away people.
And quite frankly, this place turns my stomach.
But what's the alternative?
I don't know the alternative. I just know that this is wrong.
Geoffrey! Look! Over there, with his back to us. Isn't that Weeks?
I didn't think so.
Weeks!
I...
Oh. I thought you were... Weeks.
No, lady. I'm yes.
Mr. Parkinson.
Mr. Parkinson?
Wake up, Mr. Parkinson.
What's the matter?
Oh, dear.
What's going on?
Well, isn't today the day?
First day of the examination.
Oh, heavens. Yes, it is. Oh, heck.
The first paper is on social psychology. You have exactly 3 hours to complete it.
3 minutes will be sufficient for all I know.
It's all easy, man, if you've studied dialectical materialism.
I suppose I'd better do the best I can. No one can do more.
To think Shelley could have sat in this room. If he hadn't been sent down, that is. Everything I've ever learned has gone completely out of my head. I know I'll fluff it all.
Oh, shut up and get on with it.
Oh. All right.
The second paper is on criminology. You have exactly 3 hours. The third paper is on public and social administration. You have exactly. The fourth paper is political theory. You have exactly 3 hours to complete it.
It's over. Thank God it's all over.
What's yours?
Two coffees, please.
Two coffees, please, right.
She's a bit odd, isn't she? you see, really, Geoffrey, I'm not worried about a thing about the examination results. Well, I am and I'm not, if you know what I mean.
But you want to get into social work, don't you, Liz?
Well, if I have to, I suppose I have to. But, I mean, that's not really why I came on this course.
When we first met, you told me it was because you didn't want to be raped by Mr. Washnut.
Two coffees.
Thank you.
You see, Geoffrey, I was thinking, really, rather more personally. I mean... With a woman, a professional future always takes second place to a personal future. Unless, of course, you're the horsey, fox-hunting type.
What exactly do you mean by personal?
Well, marriage.
Ah.
I mean, I want to get married, Geoffrey.
Yes. Do you?
Yes. I want to get married.
Good. Oh, this coffee's hot.
Is it too hot for you, Geoffrey?
Geoffrey, stop thinking about exam results and look who's coming out of Little College Street.
Where?
On the other side of the road, reading a book.
Weeks. Weeks Johnson.
I heard they just let him out of jail. Weeks!
Esther, don't call out to him.
Why on earth not, darling?
He might be a bit embarrassed.
Oh, don't be so stupid and suburban, Geoffrey. Weeks!
Esther!
Hello, Esther. How are you, child?
How are you?
Oh, not quite myself, thank God.
You remember Geoffrey Parkinson, Weeks, don't you?
Probably I do, yes. Hello.
Your thought it was awful, you know, Weeks, what they did to you.
Kind of you to say that, Esther, dear. I'm looking for lodgings at the moment. The college has allowed me back, but I have to find lodgings.
Oh, that's good. So they should, good heavens.
Yes. Yes.
It is nice to see you again, Weeks.
You don't know anyone, I suppose, Esther?
Anyone... what, Weeks?
Anyone with a womb to let, Ducky.
Oh, not offhand, but I'm sure you won't find it too difficult. Will he, Geoffrey?
Well, I don't suppose so. As long as we haven't read the Oxford Mail, eh?
Oh, don't be silly, Weeks.
There seem to be two types of landlady at Oxford. Those who rub vic on your chest every night and moan about their husbands, and those who are convinced their lodgers still owe a week's rent or have broken the old aspidistra pot.
Oh, that's marvellous, Weeks. Isn't that marvellous, Geoffrey?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for saying that, Esther.
Now, that doesn't sound like you, Weeks.
Very little that I say nowadays does sound like me, I'm afraid, Esther. When you see people, you must say, Weeks tries to be himself, but he can't quite manage it.
Rubbish! You're every bit your old self, isn't he, Geoffrey?
Yes. As a post-prison treat, I have bought myself the poems of Coventry Patmore.
That's what you're reading now.
Listen to this, Esther. Love wakes men once a lifetime each. They lift their heavy lids and look, and lo, what one sweet page can teach. They read with joy, then shut the book. And some give thanks, and some blaspheme, and most forget. But either way, that and the child's unheeded dream is all the light of all their day.
Beautiful,
isn't it?
Geoffrey, don't you think that's beautiful?
Yes. I must look for lodgings.
We mustn't delay you.
No.
Goodbye, Weeks.
When you meet people, say you've seen the crucified Weeks. Say there's precious little resurrection. Precious little resurrection of the dead.
Poor Weeks. He's not himself, is he?
Prison seems to have brought him down to earth.
And destroyed him. I'm quite certain now that social adjustment and mental health are the enemies of true creativity.
I didn't really quite understand the significance of that poem, Esther.
That's merely because you're very stupid and very suburban, darling.
You know, since I've been up here at Oxford, the real issues of the class war have become a lot clearer for me. I mean, when I first came up here to Oxford, I thought the only way I could help the working classes was by going back to the boys on the factory floor. Do you follow me? Do you understand?
Oh, yes, I understand. I follow you.
I mean, don't think for one moment I want to escape to a better life or anything petty bourgeois like that. No, that's farthest from a thought.
Yeah, of course, yes.
But being that I shall soon be qualified, it would be rather a waste if I just, well, went back to the boys on the factory floor, if you see what I mean.
Definitely, yes, definitely.
But I'm not looking for easy options, you understand?
I wish people wouldn't keep on and on talking about exam results. I've said 100 times I'm not worried about them in the least. I just wish I knew what they were.
If anyone's going to fluff them, it's me, Liz. You've no cause for any worries.
I shall get the diploma framed in a great big gilt frame, and I shall give it to my mummy, and you know what will happen then?
No.
She will kneel towards Mecca, and she will give thanks to the Almighty Allah. That's what she will do, man. And I won't tell her for one moment that it's all thanks to my reading the collected works of Marx and Engels. No, I won't tell her that much.
Esther?
Louis, yes.
I hope we shall still be able to keep in touch when we go down, Esther.
That would be nice.
Mind you, I don't think now I really want to do social work anymore.
No?
You see, I've discovered something I hadn't really realized before. People are difficult. Not just people with problems, I mean all people are difficult.
So what are you going to do then, Lewis?
I think I shall try to make a lot of money.
What was that, Lewis?
I said, I think I shall try to make a lot of money.
Oh, good gracious. How unchristian.
I think you may all be interested to hear
The examination results are now posted in the school's building.
Wonder of wonders.
So has Lizzie.
I failed.
You've passed.
Oh, have I? Have I really?
I've
passed. Hooray!
What about me?
Oh, wait a moment. Musa.
I passed.
Oh, sorry, Musa. Apparently not.
Not passed? I've not passed.
What about me?
For some reason, you're not on this list, Geoffrey. Yes,
probably I was so bad they didn't even think it worth registering a failure.
Oh, here we are. Geoffrey. You've been awarded a distinction.
Yes.
You see? You are the cleverest man in Oxford.
Oh, my God.
You've got a distinction?
Unbelievable.
Congrats, old boy. There must be some mistake. Some great big terrible mistake. It's impossible that I failed. They must have got the papers muddled up. Oh dear. Oh dear me, what am I going to tell my mommy? That's what I want to know. What am I going to tell my dear, dear mommy in El Fashir?
This will be the last time we walk round Christchurch Meadow, Esther.
I don't really mind all that much. I'm getting rather bored with Oxford.
You bored with Oxford?
No, I've decided everything here is too affected. To tell you the truth, Geoffrey, I shall be quite glad to be back in London. The world there is real.
You want reality, Esther?
Reality is just a different form of unreality, darling.
Well, the form that hurts.
What do you think of the announcement, Geoffrey?
What announcement?
Do you mean to say you haven't heard?
Heard what?
You must be the only person in Young Husband House. Almost immediately after the exam results, Lizzie and Eric announced their engagement.
Who to?
To each other, darling.
Impossible.
Impossible, but possible.
But she hated Eric, from the word go.
You know Lizzie, Geoffrey. Her feelings usually contradict everything she thinks and says.
You think so?
On the surface, Lizzie is terrified of life and sex. But by the time she's 40, sex and life will probably be terrified of her.
You see her as a nervous bully.
Oh, she's a fascinating, frightened person, Geoffrey. But I think if she had more courage, she'd be unbearable.
Poor Eric.
Oh, yes. And you remember all the hoo-ha Eric used to make about going back to help the lads on the factory floor? Well, now all that's been thrown to one side. He's applied for an £800-a-year job as a personnel manager with a firm that makes baked beans or baked something or other.
What about all those high ideals he always used to threaten us with?
Oxford secretly turns everyone into a snob of some sort or another.
What about you, Esther? What are you going to do?
I'm half tempted to apply to become a child care officer.
Are you? Good heavens, that's even more surprising.
Well, yes. Probably I won't, though.
Esther, are you going to tell me the name of the man...
I love.
Yes.
Oh, Geoffrey, you're just so naive. You surely must have guessed by now.
At first, I thought it might be Weeks, but, well...
Weeks was a first cross between a petulant child and a genius. I could have sacrificed myself for him, but his qualities lay beyond the attacks of love. Anyway, now he's gone completely sane. Have a guess.
I can't.
Just one. And if you're wrong, I'll tell you.
Esther. Is it... me?
You? Did you say you, Geoffrey?
Well...
Geoffrey, I take it as a great compliment that you should...
No, actually, Esther, I didn't really know. Well, I just said it as a joke.
Silly jest.
So it wasn't really a compliment after all, darling.
No, well, in a way, a silly one, I suppose.
I'm in love with Lewis Chatham.
Seriously?
I don't know whether it's serious or not, but it's quite desperate on my part.
What about him?
I'm sure he's in love with me, but I don't think he knows it yet. You see, when he was a child, his parents didn't give him many emotions to play with. He's very upper crust, so of course he's been deprived emotionally. Poor dear Lewis. He's an orphan. With parents.
Hello, Mr. Parkinson. Not gone yet?
No, Miss Beaches, just on my way.
I think you're the only one left. No, 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 that's wrong. I'm mistaken. I saw Elizabeth Bulwer in the junior common room.
Oh, I'll just go and have a quick word with her. Oh, Miss Beaches, My landlady wanted you to know she could take another student.
Oh, yes. Probably we won't, though. We normally only use Mr. and Mrs. Gillies when we're really desperate for accommodation, you see. Huh? I mean, they're so eccentric about animals. Well, I'm sure you must have discovered that. I didn't ever tell you, did I? The student before you discovered he was quite frequently given dog's food for his evening meal.
No, Miss Beaches, you didn't tell me.
Oh, Mr. Parkinson, how lovely. How absolutely lovely.
Geoffrey.
Oh, hello, Lizzie.
You've heard my news. Well, you must have. I'm going to marry Eric.
Yes, Esther mentioned.
I mean, it goes without saying that I don't love him or anything like that. I mean, physically, he's rather repulsive, isn't he? Except his teeth. I mean, you can't criticise his teeth. They are lovely and white, and he takes a lot of care of them, which is strange, considering he comes from a hard-working class home.
Lizzie, after all your worries about him, how did you...
Well, you didn't want me, did you, Geoffrey? You know, I know what people think of me. Neurotic. Well, they think I'm neurotic. Well, I suppose I am, yes.
No.
Yes, but you see, through everything, I see what's important in life. For me, you see, I know I must not be on my own. I must be attached to someone. Well, if it could be to someone I love, well, that would be a luxury. But it's not vital, Geoffrey. Love is not essential in life, Geoffrey. I found that out, but attachment is essential.
Lizzie. Oh, Lizzie. How could I have been so wrong about Esther? And Lizzie? Doesn't all go too well for my future. I'm supposed to be able to understand people. Still, what's that compared to getting a diploma with a distinction? Oh, that's no mean achievement. Good heavens, no. I mean, how many people can there be in Epsom with a distinction? None, I should imagine.
Returning to our town.
Look! He's riding on a dog motorbike!
Is it Jesus, Mummy?
No, not Jesus, dear. But you're almost right. When you grow up, you'll remember this day. Because the man we're all waiting to see has done something very, very wonderful.
It's quite unbelievable.
Yes!
Certainly.
Never happened before here, ever.
What's he done then, Mummy?
Well, dear, he's been awarded a distinction diploma.
Actually willing to mix with ordinary people like you and me.
your father and I are very proud of you, Geoffrey. Oh, you do look tired, darling. I hope you haven't been overdoing it.
Where is he?
Your father? Oh, I think he's at the end of the garden, doing something with Brussels sprouts or something.
Oh.
Shall I make you a cup of milk?
Oh, no, thank you, Mother.
Oh, do have a nice hot cup of malted milk. It's marvellous if you've been overdoing things, darling.
I haven't been overdoing things, Mother.
Oh, very well, dear. Now, why don't you just go and lie down on your bed and have a good sleep for a little while?
Really, I'm absolutely...
Hello, Geoffrey. Back.
Yes, I'm back.
Which route did you take?
Reading Guildford.
I think I'd have taken the Henley Hamlet.
Oh, I'm going to congratulate Geoffrey on his marvellous results, Will.
Oh, well done, Geoffrey. Let's hope you'll be able to settle down now.
Oh, let the boy get in before you start discussions
well,
like that.
Well, be sensible. Distinction, diploma or not, he's still got to get a job.
Oh, I know, Will, but surely we don't have to start worrying him with things like that yet.
No. But it mustn't be left for too long. The boy realizes as well as I do that he's soon got to settle down to the business of life.
Yes, but we...
Geoffrey's got to get a proper job, Claire. His days of cakes and ale are over now. Over forever.
In The Cleverest Man at Oxford by Geoffrey Parkinson, Geoffrey Beavers played Geoffrey Parkinson, Julia Hills, Esther, and Meg Davis, Lizzie. Muse Amanda was Nigel Anthony, Weeks Johnson, Patrick Malahide, Eric Dunn, Christian Rodsker, Lewis Chatto, Geoffrey Bateman, the Governor, Peter Copley, the Chief Officer, Bill Wallace, Miss Beaches, Peggy Ann Wood, Mrs. Gillies, Joe Anderson, and the Matron, Nina Holloway. Mother was Daphne Hurd, the second academic, David Ponting, the librarian, Victoria Wicks, and the examiner, Michael Drew. Weeks's opera was sung by members of Clifton Cathedral Choir. The music director was Christopher Walker. The Cleverest Man at Oxford was directed from Bristol by Sean McLaughlin.